I just believe in the process, and we're going to win going through the process.
Now, Bills Mafia, it's time for the main event. So sit back and enjoy the show.
Bills Mafia, welcome to the Red, White and Buffalo Blues, a UK Bills podcast. Bills News with a UK twist. Robin, Mark, myself, Matt, and thank God it's bye week, but what the fuck has happened this week? We can start with the Eagles game, we can start with New Tonight, we can start with pretty much anything, because we've got no previews, so it'll be a free-for-all night, and I think we'll say explicit warning for bad language.
There may be some bad fucking language, yeah. You know, we've played potentially, defensively or arguably, in the last 4 years, 2023 season, 22, 21 and 20, we've arguably played in each of the games of the season. We've played in the Hail Mary, we've played in the 13 seconds, we've played in the Vikings game of 2022, and this was probably certainly up there with one of the games in season that we fucking lost all four of them. And all four of them we should have won. And all four of them, you cannot be too churlish. You have to say the opposition played very well at times, but they went and won it, and we went and lost it in all four times. And it's not that Bills can't win big games, but we can't win big games when they're close. And
yeah.
I think that's the thing that burns. The refereeing burns, the dropped catches burn, Tyler Bass missing two field goals burns. There's stuff we're responsible for. But when it's all said and done, other teams find ways to win and we find ways to lose.
And Mark,
I don't know how we halt that.
Mark's got his handle as Fireshaw McDermott, hoping that lightning strikes twice.
Let us have it. Let's hear the worst case scenario.
It's a weird thing, isn't it? Because we've spent all season or a large chunk of the season talking about how it's the offense that's been letting us down, and it's the defense that's been keeping us in games. And like I think I said on this very podcast last week that I love our defense.
Yeah.
And yet, when it gets to the crunch, and our defense needs to make a stop, we can't do it. In Robin, in each one of those games that you mentioned there, we had the lead. With a fraction of time, seconds, or a couple of minutes left to go.
Yeah.
And in every single one of them, we've needed to make a stop, and we can't do it. And we've done it, and we've done it this season. We did it in this game. Let's be honest. We battered the Eagles in this game.
Yes, we did.
Battered them.
Yeah. Fucking MVP Jalen Hurts was shit for 2.5 quarters.
Yeah.
I'm just going to say that.
We outgained the Eagles by over 100 yards.
Yeah.
I think I heard somewhere that there has only ever been 40 occasions in the history of the NFL where a team has got over 500 yards of offense, has made 10 third down stops, and was plus in the turnover battle in a game. Yep. 40 times in NFL history that's happened. This was the first time that the team did that, lost.
Yes.
You know what the record was?
The record was? How do you mean?
Like the teams entering that week, entering the games, the win-loss record. The wins record.
It was 39-0, wasn't it?
Yeah. 39-0, and then we're the first team that's lost in that scenario. But it's so the Eagles now, the Broncos that happened,
Yeah.
The Bengals, Patriots. We couldn't find a way to stop them. The Patriots have happened. Let's not forget, even the Giants took it down the end. And if it wasn't for a non-call pass interference, they would have gone on to win the game as well.
Tampa had a Hail Mary near the end. It was a live game, wasn't it?
It was there. Yeah. So the defense has been, for the most part, given the injuries, has been outstanding.
Yes.
So what is fundamentally wrong with this team when it comes to the crunch, when it comes to getting over the hump, when it comes to winning that close game? Because we just can't do it. We absolutely can't do it. And I think that for the entire season, when offense has been struggling, Sean McDermott has banged on about complementary football and how, and effectively what he's been saying there is, we need to find a way of, you know, we need to get into a rhythm on offense and we need to play complementary football. Basically, the offense has been letting down the defense.
Hmm. Yeah.
Well, the last we fired Ken Dorsey, and lo and behold, our offense has found its feet again. We know how to score points, and all of a sudden, they look great again. At the end of the game, when it's the defense that's let down the offense, he's remarkably quiet about complementary football all of a sudden in his pre-match press conference. Doesn't mention that. Mm. And when pressed on it, got a bit shirty with the reporters because he doesn't like it when it's his defense called into question. But this goes back to him. It goes back to the season before and the season before that. He is too cautious.
Yeah.
We get into a scenario where the defense needs to make a stop. And it wasn't even just it wasn't even just overtime. It wasn't even just the fourth quarter. After about halfway through the third quarter, when they went touchdown, touchdown, touchdown to end the game, our defense just, like, it stopped doing the plays that it was doing, or not even, so. And I don't mean the players not executing. I mean, the play calling became too passive. We went out to try and avoid losing the game. We didn't go out to win the game. The defense stopped trying to win the game. We went there. We suddenly go into our shell. We become cautious. Some of the other decisions that were made with other things in the game that I'm sure we'll get into were laughable. But fundamentally, Sean McDermott is cautious by nature. He's risk averse. And that will take you a certain way. That will take you so far with the team. And he's done an amazing job in terms of culture, in terms of turning the franchise around. But I believe he is this generation's Marty Schottenheimer. He will take you so far. He will make you into a really, really good functional side that does very well and usually makes the playoffs. But in the biggest games, when everything's on the line, he can't do it. And we're going to waste Josh Allen's career if we stick with him.
It's interesting. I mean, as I say, I'll give McDermott a bit of credit that with the injuries that we've had, he's actually, this defense at times has shown that it is actually up there and it is the best.
No problem. But, no question about that. Absolutely no question.
But yeah,
I completely agree with you.
It's the decision making which is bad. It's, I mean, wasted chances at
the crucial time.
But I would contest that if we had Daquan Jones in the team, if we had Von Miller in the team, if we had Trey White in the team, and if Matt Milano was in the team, we would still lose that game.
Yeah.
Yes.
Doesn't matter. Because it isn't having those players that makes the difference. It's having the person who's making the play calls. It's having the person saying on that drive in overtime or in the drives to give them the chance to get the field goal to tie the game. It was 13 seconds all over again.
Yeah.
We play soft, we play deep, we play passive. They had players, some of their guys were talking afterwards, saying the Jalen Hurts touchdown in overtime, they were like, they made the comment of saying that they couldn't believe the look that the Bills defense gave them, because the Jalen Hurts run for the touchdown is one of the staples of their offense. And either we haven't prepared, so aren't aware of it, or we've made such a ludicrously bad decision on the field that we weren't set up to be able to stop it. But they run that play all the time. And the Eagles players said as soon as they saw the safety move, they knew that Jalen Hurts was going to score a touchdown on that play. They knew. Yeah. And sure enough, he walks in untouched. How on earth are we in a situation whereby we are allowing that to happen?
Oh, yeah, exactly. I think it, what makes it worse is obviously with that, they had, 20 seconds at the end of that half. He wasted a stupid timeout on icing a kicker from 59 yards out, where even if he got it over, you still have 20 seconds left. If he didn't, you'd have good field position. You'd have, one or two timeouts left? I wasn't...
There are two timeouts left, and he took one timeout to ice the kicker. Now, I did some detailed research on icing kickers, by which I mean I Googled, does icing the kicker make a difference? Clicked on the first result I found, and then copied this paragraph, which was actually quite interesting. Looking at all field goal attempts in Q4 and OT, there are 1,070 attempts, 761 or 71% of them were good. Given the condition of whether a kicker was iced or not, does not seem to make a difference. For kickers who were iced, the number of made field goals drops to 123 or 63%, while the kickers who were not iced, 73% was good. Icing the kicker doesn't work, but coaches keep on doing it anyway. It makes no meaningful statistical difference. And I always compare everything to tennis. It's like when everyone says, if you serve first in the fifth set, you get an advantage because the other guy's under pressure. So you always have to serve saying it. It's not true. It's 50-50. Whether the guy receiving serve or guy serving first. It's just a thing people think. And for Sean McDermott to take the ball away from Josh Allen after a guy's nailed a 59-yard field goal and not give him two timeouts for 20 seconds to at least throw the ball up there. The Lions game, their Thanksgiving, for Christ's sake, they had even less than 20 seconds, I think, last time. One mega throw to Diggs and they were already in field goal range.
I mean, we've literally had it happen to us.
Yes,
with 7 seconds less, you know, you give someone with the best 12 seconds
in the regular season, the Chiefs.
Yeah, yeah.
You give someone
with the most powerful arm in the NFL that amount of time and two timeouts. You've got the middle of the field is in play at that point. It was ridiculous, but that is everything that it's everything about Sean. He's scared.
Yeah, it's like he gets a 10 point lead. We had a 10 point lead at halftime. We had a 10 or 14 point lead against the Texans. I remember this started in the Texans in the 2019 wildcard game, and they did a similar thing again. They were two scores up and looking comfortable, and then they suddenly go all conservative and scared and, oh, don't give up the deep ball. And I mean, you said it yourself, that, you know, the passive, give them the 6-7 yard throw, and then they just fall apart because the defense then starts to drop their head as well. And I just don't know if you can get around that. The only way is win by three scores and hang on.
I talk about adjustment on the offense. I mean, and this is what is probably making everyone say McDermott, yeah, he's a good DC, but he's not a good head coach. Whatever adjustments he did at halftime should not have happened. Because the last six Eagle drives, they let off, they let 8 yards per play and about 30 odd points on that drive in the second half after being held to 7 points or less in the first half and actually suffocating a not a high powered offense, but an offense that is capable of putting up a good amount of points as we've seen during the season for the Eagles. The Bills hold them, and yet the second half, whatever McDermott wanted to do, is probably a case, oh yeah, we've built up a good lead now, let's go conservative. That's what we say, lose games. I'm looking at the Texans, for example. They've got a defensive head coach in DeMarco Ryans. They're playing good football on both sides and actually are probably the most improved team in the league. You've got other teams that are actually playing good defense. I did have another example in my head. The Lions, on occasions, have played decent complementary football offensively and defensively, and they've got a defensive minded coach as a head coach, and they're playing aggressive on both sides of the balls. But yet, when it comes to McDermott, it seems like he starts off aggressive, but then decides to go back into his shell. And
there's nothing wrong with having a defensive-minded coach. That's fine. Yeah. Defensive-minded coach is fine. But when you've got the lead, you step on their head. You don't give them the momentum back. And if they, hey, if they pull a 70-yard field goal and they go down the field in six plays and score 80 yards, fine. That means Josh Allen gets the ball back and we can chew the clock and go down the field on the other way and score another touchdown. Fine.
Yeah.
It just doesn't even work on its own terms. Like, if you're going to say, well, we'll play conservative to hold the lead, if that works, okay, fair enough. But it doesn't, and he doesn't change.
Yeah. Mm. As the old adage goes, the only thing that the prevent defense does is prevent you from winning. It's, I don't understand how it can be time and time and time again. Everybody else can see it. And this is a game that's as close to must-win as it gets, right? This wasn't a game that we could have afforded to lose based on stuff that's gone on earlier on in the season. And you're right, it's yet again, it's another one of those absolute classics that the Bills are involved in, and yet we lead with a handful of seconds left and we can't find a way to do it because we just shoot ourselves constantly in the foot. Mm. And it's so frustrating. It's so frustrating. This whole season, for whatever reason, has just been this absolute barrage of frustration.
And yeah.
We've gone through the period of offensively being cack, and clearly, like, having Ken Dorsey there was a massive mistake, and that's one that we've now realised and got over. But now we've got to get over the next one. I love Sean McDermott. I think he's done a fantastic job. But he has taken this team as far as it can go.
I have a feeling with that. I mean, I'd rather us lose games by being aggressive on defense. That's how I'd love to lose games. If we're 20 points up and we're still aggressive and we can see 21 without scoring, I'll put my hands up and say, the better team won because we were aggressive. Maybe there was an odd mistake in there, but if we played mistake-free aggressive football and we conceded 21 points without scoring and lost the game, I put my hands up and say, yeah, okay, we deserve that. I'll take that loss. But playing that conservative, soft coverage, no press, is not the way to do it. And that's how we lost the game. That's how we've lost the previous our playoff games. So the AFC Championship games, especially the Bengals, that was soft coverage that actually cost us. The Chiefs. In the third, and before that, that was soft coverage. Again, that cost us. I have a feeling, and I have a bad feeling about this, that Chris McDermott has this credit in the bank that he actually got us over the drought. He's got us 3 years straight of AFC East champions. I have a bad feeling Pegula will not fire him, but if there's anything good coming out of Pegula, he must know that this team's struggling and they can't get over that hump of a playoffs into Super. He's got to make that change.
I think Pegula will probably take the pragmatic approach, knowing that he got burned badly. He burned his own balls appointing Rex Ryan as his first head coach. I think McDermott has probably bought himself until the middle of next year. I think you can certainly make the argument that he's taking the team as far as he can. I think there's a lot of merit in that. If McDermott knows he's fighting for his job, what he may seek to do is bring another DC in, carry on being the culture and standards guy, but get a DC in to call for him and just be a head coach and not intervene. I don't know whether he'll do that. He'll probably still want to intervene because he did that with Leslie Frazier, because we all kind of wanted to blame Leslie Frazier for 13 seconds. It's looking more and more obvious that it was McDermott that seemed to be the one that got scared. And we wanted to say, well, now Leslie's gone, you know, Sean's gonna toughen us up a bit. And that hasn't proven to be the case. Go on.
And what's bizarre about it is the fact that it's almost like, regardless of the situation, he gets it wrong. Like when we had in this game, we play soft coverage when we don't need to be playing, when we shouldn't be playing soft coverage. And it was only a couple of weeks ago, I think it was the Broncos game, where we're blitzing on the second play in a row that they beat us, that they beat us on.
Oh, with a cover zero. Yeah. And they beat the cover zero. The top, yeah.
Yeah. And I'm like, how are you not able to like read a game to make, and you manage to make the wrong call every single time? To your point about McDermott, I think a lot of it will come down to if we don't make the playoffs, which is looking increasingly unlikely, I think he will canvass opinion in the locker room. And I think he will go around the big names to kind of get their take on it and see if the locker room has lost faith in him, to see if they're still buying that into his ideas. And if they say no, I think he'll go.
That's the question I was going to ask. I mean, I'm probably in agreeing that McDermott has to go on there, but I don't think it'll be during the season. I think they'll wait till the end of the season.
Still in with a shout. You know, we come off the bye. We've beaten the Chiefs the last two games. It's not inconceivable we could beat the Chiefs. Cowboys in Dallas would be a different matter. I think we beat the Cowboys at home. Chargers are kind of doing a Bills, or the Bills are doing a Chargers, depending on how you look at it. It's not inconceivable the win against the Chiefs could get us two more. Patriots revenge game, and then it's, you know, and then it's and then it's live. But, so I think he's probably safe to the end of the season.
But if we come out of the bye week, we lose to Chiefs, lose to the Cowboys, and pretty much almost mathematically out of the playoffs. Do you get rid of him, then get someone and start the coaching early, or do you still run with him to the end of the season, knowing that you are going to fire him anyway? Because who are you going to get in? Other than promote Eric Washington, who's the assistant head coach, to interim head coach, you won't be able to get anyone in between now and the end of the season. Do you just roll with McDermott till the end of the season, regardless if we make playoffs or not, or if we struggle and we're out of contention in 2 weeks' time? Or do you then start the search, or do you start the search early? Place like Eric Washington into the head coach role on the interim period.
I don't know how it works in America, but if you take this country as an analogy, say like a big football club over here was thinking about sacking their manager, it almost doesn't matter when you do it because they've started sounding out other managers way before they actually make the official approach. We're not able to make an official approach with certain players until after like Black Monday or whatever they call it. And further if that coach is in the playoffs.
No, I think they changed the rules on that.
They can approach them, but I don't think they can interview them. I might be wrong. But I think you roll with McDermott till the end of the season, regardless of results. And because there's no point in, like, it's not like you're going to hire someone else that long term now. So I would imagine that if they're thinking about talking to other people, they will have probably already started doing it. And it depends who they're interested in. You know, I think the clever money at the moment is on Ben Johnson, the Lions offensive coordinator. It makes a lot of sense, but he's very, very run first, and I'm not sure that he would be the best fit for Josh Allen. I'd like to think that Josh Allen would be probably included as part of the decision-making process because he's your franchise guy, and he's the one you're paying, you know, like £500 million to over the next couple of years. So he probably want his sign-off on whoever the next head coach is going to be. But I cannot believe for a second that he sat there going, yeah, do you know what? I'm comfortable with this. I want it to be Sean McDermott, given that how many countless times have we been in this situation in the last 3 or 4 years, as we said, the offense has put us in a position to win. The defense can't get it done. I would be amazed if he doesn't want to change, because he wants to win a Super Bowl. And he's probably sat there thinking, I've been in this league 6 years now. I don't know how many good years I've got left. Let's hope it's a lot, but I mean, who knows?
Andrew Luck was finished by 29, 30, wasn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. It takes one play, one bad injury, and all of a sudden you're not the same guy anymore.
Here we go. The league rules about hiring is designed to slow the hiring process. If a team wished to interview a head coaching candidate who's either not in the playoffs or number one seed in the playoffs, they must wait until 3 days after the conclusion of the candidate's Week 18 game.
Okay.
If a team wishes to interview a head coaching candidate whose team's in the wildcard round, it must wait till Tuesday or Wednesday after the wildcard round, depending on what day that's played. That interview can be in-person or virtual, but the first one, for anyone outside the playoffs, it must wait to actually to 3 days after to conduct a virtual interview. Teams must conduct their initial interviews with candidates currently employed in an NFL team before the conclusion of the divisional round. No second interview will be allowed for a candidate on a playoff team until that team is eliminated from postseason contention or until the bye week before the Super Bowl. So it should be a team competing in that.
Fine.
Okay. That's the rules on there. Then looking at it, you've got coaches on there. I mean, Ben Johnson's obviously one of them. The trouble is, obviously, you're having people have arguments. I've seen arguments on the UK Bills WhatsApp group, and obviously people going back and forth on Twitter. There's concern of hiring like first, second year coordinators, but there's also risk and reward. It's a risk reward situation with it, because obviously Ben Johnson,
it's bird in the hand and two in the bush, isn't it? It's as I said in episode 2, you know, careful what you wish for. We all lived through the drought. We all lived through Dick Duron and Chan Gailey and Doug Marone and those sort of various mediocre, perfectly nice people, but you know, very mediocre coaches. Be careful what you trade for.
So, I mean, obviously, people are looking at Ben Johnson. There's also I'm looking through just a list of candidates that people put out. They obviously got the Texans offensive coordinator, Bobby Slowick, who's obviously improved that off Texans offense behind CJ Stroud from 30th in points per game to 10th currently. 31st in total yards per game to 6th currently. They were 32nd last year in yards per play. Now they're 7th. And third down conversions, they were 31st down to 13th. But he's a one year OC. Obviously. You got Frank Smith, the Miami Dolphins offensive coordinator. He was actually under... has been instrumental in this offense, in the Miami offense. Okay, it is McDaniel's offense, but he's been described as, and this is from Mike McDaniel himself, he's been described as a thorough understanding of the game and as a great teacher, which is what coaching is really all about. He has a unique ability to anticipate problems before they arise, be that on the field or in the administrative type, related to schedules, questions that will come up with players or coaches. He operates on a daily basis of passion, positivity, and humility that's rare and sets him apart.
Written by his agent, certainly.
That was actually Mike McDaniel.
Ah.
That was Mike McDaniel actually saying that about him. And obviously another guy that they put on there is the Philadelphia OC, Brian Johnson.
See, I'm not convinced with him, and I think a lot of the Eagles fans and players aren't mad keen on Brian Johnson. He's not someone that I would want to be too high on, particularly. I don't think, given the talent that offense has got on the offensive line, they've been outgained by over 100 yards in their last four games. They found a way to win them, but I also don't think that, for me, he's the right direction for us.
I mean, one name or probably two names that you could probably put in there I know I always listen. Well, I used to listen to the Air Raid Hour when they were actually when they actually were trying to hire a new offensive coordinator. They asked for Todd Monken, the Baltimore Ravens offensive coordinator. Now, having someone like that and what he's done and how he's actually taken Lamar Jackson as a and made him more of a pocket passer as well as a rusher, make him a true dual threat. Having someone like that with Josh Allen and with the talent that he can get on there is a possible another name. But
shall we suspend judgment on that until we see if the Ravens get past the divisional round? Because they often flatter to deceive, don't they? The Ravens, and then they often come unstuck in the wild card or divisional round. So again, you don't want to swap one divisional round ceiling for another.
But I think everyone can agree that it is an offensive minded coach that we actually need to probably go forward.
I think you can have a decent OC. Everyone seems to be going for a Sean McVay for everyone, but I think that there's nothing wrong with having just a DC that can just keep his foot on the gas. I'd settle for that. That can make the most of Josh Allen, get us another receiver, play with the players we've got.
I think a lot of it comes down to who he hires as his coordinators.
Also true, yeah.
Yeah, needs to either stick with Joe Brady if he does well enough for the remainder of this season, or bring in someone that's going to make a massive difference. I agree, though. I think that everyone assumes it will be an offensive guy, but for every Sean McVay you get, or for every Mike McDaniel you get, you also get an Arthur Smith, who goes and does not light it up when he goes to a new area. And I do think you have to be like, it's a bit of a cautionary tale, but I don't want the organization to be a bit like Sean McDermott when it comes to making a decision. You know, let's not go into the prevent defense when it comes to hiring someone. If there's someone that we want out there and we think that that's what we need to get us over the hump to win a Super Bowl, then we've got to do it. It's because I just don't think we're ever going to do it with the organization as it is. I absolutely would keep Brandon Bean. I would not get rid of him as GM.
Oh, yeah.
One of you Kyrie Elam in the first round? I mean, he's had his hits. We'll give him Josh Allen. We'll give him Trey White. That's not his fault. He got injured. We'll give him Tremaine Edmonds. We'll probably give him Dalton Kincaid. A few of the guys have stepped up his late round picks.
Greg Rousseau, Terrell Bernard is coming good now.
Yeah,
but he also pulled the trigger on Von Miller. And
shall we talk about that?
To be continued.
Yes.
I was going to put in a bit more about...
Story currently being updated as we record at time of recording. Yeah.
Yeah.
I just get rid of him.
I think I
am not one of those people who says, look, one allegation, you know, it's her word against his, and one allegation, that kind of thing. It's not, it's three now. You know, if you had three allegations, sorry, there's something there. Sorry.
I think for me, I always want to hear what it is he's actually done. Because I think that when you, like, sometimes you can have grandioso titles about what someone's been charged for. Like, you look at the Zay Jones equivalent at the Jaguars when he was exactly Von, calm down. When recently Zay Jones was being looked at and was like that, some of the stuff that they were talking about was mental, but actually, when you delved into it in a little bit more depth, I think he was charged for domestic assault and battery and a lot of shit. And it turned out that he just pulled someone's necklace off them in an argument. So let's find out a little bit more before we cut the guy and condemn him to a life on the scrap heap. Let's find out what it is, you know, what kind of argument with all these three in the same incidents. I want to find out what the situation is first. If it is bad, see you later.
And let's
be honest.
Not a great loss.
He's been shit this season, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Against the Eagles, he couldn't get past the backup tight end. Yeah. And he didn't even look close to getting back past the backup tight end. And I
don't
know.
They're right, starting right tackle as well, aren't they?
Yeah, he was appalling. And I think the whole season we've kind of been waiting on him to you know, get your reps, come good. It'll get there eventually. But it just hasn't for him. And that isn't that absolutely shouldn't be a reason why you charge someone or don't charge someone if they've done something wrong. But it will, for me at the minute, our best edge rushers are Greg Rousseau and Leonard Floyd. And like Von Miller doesn't even get in the conversation at the minute. So if he's been a silly boy, he's been a silly boy. It makes it a far less of a blow for us, I think, because he's been dreadful this year. And who knows if he's ever the same player again.
It's the Matt Araujo scenario all over again. We cut him even before he took a snap because of an allegation. It came out a year later that it was actually a false allegation. Everything was dropped.
I don't know if that's actually true, that it was actually a false allegation. The charges were dropped because they didn't have enough evidence to prosecute. That's not the same thing as saying he was innocent.
Fair enough.
That's fair.
Anyone
can make an allegation about anyone else. I'm just saying if it happens too often, I'm sorry, that's a pattern of behaviour. And at this point, someone needs to come forward and explain themselves.
I think a lot of it depends on what.
Everyone's got someone with an axe to grind. Okay, that's fine. I can buy that. But he had a revenge porn thing a year ago that he made go away. He had another thing a few years ago that they settled out of court. Sorry, that's just happening too often.
The only downside to this, obviously, is at the moment until the outcome comes or whatever that is. If he is found guilty, there hopefully will be able to void his contract and actually not incur any penalties, because cutting him and all that, obviously he signed a 6-year deal, but it could be got out of after the third year.
Yeah.
So after next year, we could get out of that contract with no cap hit or cap penalty. But if obviously, this will probably take a long time because it's a high-profile player and all that, and they're going to try and push back. And apparently, they've got to find him. And someone made a joke on one of the chats.
Yeah, saying, I mean, we're beyond the thing of an allegation. This is a felony warrant, isn't it? It's not like you'll never guess what someone said about you on social media today. This is,
the accusation is that he pushed her and put his hands around her neck.
Yeah. Then that's obviously bringing something up. And let's say, I think the one quote that made me laugh on this one was, obviously he's on the run at the moment. Apparently no one can find him. Someone actually put this in.
He's going to be in a white Bronco before you know it.
Yeah. I was going to say, the defense were probably looking for him. Been looking for him for a few games as well.
who was it? Someone put on one of the group chats saying they're searching for him. Another one goes, we couldn't find him on the pitch. What chance have the cops got?
Ding ding.
Yeah, well done.
But no, I think it's gonna be difficult. I mean, difficult for the Bills to try and get out of cap hell because of the contract they gave him. And all that. I mean, maybe there is a way, maybe it's not. But if he's done that, and it's actually proved that he physically actually put his hands on her and assaulted her, then I would say goodbye, see you later, don't come back. But I want to just wait until, well, obviously it's proven innocent till proven guilty. Warrant for that does say he's guilty, but until he's actually put in front of the judge, they've seen all the evidence, made decision, and the paddle goes down, I'm still maintaining innocence. But either way, his career, probably in Buffalo and in the NFL, is near enough over. or probably is over right about now.
Yeah.
So another thing that we're going to talk about, and we're going to go back to the Eagles game now, is black and white.
Oh, good. Yeah.
Black and white. And the referees.
Yes.
And what
the rumor has it that on Sunday at about 7 o'clock you'll be able to have a look, and the Bills will have received 7 penalties for 80 yards despite not playing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we've already been given a 15-yard penalty for Von Miller.
Yeah. Not enough men on the field. It's a Bills 15-yard penalty.
But I mean, it's ultimately ridiculous. I mean, what ended up? I had stats here. I think it was like 11
to 1 in the first half, wasn't it?
Altogether, let's have a look. Team stats, penalty yards: 11 for 80 yards for the Bills, 4 for 30 for the Eagles. But it should have been a lot. Yeah.
And let's not forget, two of those came in that last drive with Jason Kelce, and they were desperate to not give those. So it was up to that point, they'd had like one penalty given against them the whole game.
Yeah,
and then obviously you have the horse collar tackle, which was called for intentional grounding. Yes. If you watch the replay.
He was outside of the numbers, so you can't.
But
there was a receiver in the area.
And Gabe was standing right there, wasn't it? Right, given there. He was being horse collared to the ground, it actually wasn't that bad a throw. It was quite near him.
And that basically, like, you can argue that play has a direct result on the entire game, because instead of its loss of down. Instead of it being a relatively chip shot field goal or a shot at the end zone, still, all of a sudden it's a fourth down. We take a field goal, we miss it, and you get no points from that trip to the end zone. And
two calls on Darius Slay. Well, I think it was two. One definitely, which was a blatant pass interference. There, where he actually covered his arms as the ball was coming, and how do you not see that?
Yeah,
I tell you what, guys, you cannot show me the difference between that and the catch and fumble that the Ravens had in their game on the same weekend.
AJ Brown,
there is absolutely no difference between what happened with AJ Brown in overtime. Any other game, any other team, anyone else going on, and with not that refereeing court group, that's a catch and a fumble and a recovery from the Bills, game over, game won. The same thing happened in the Ravens game that same day, almost like bang bang, the same play, and it was a catch and a fumble recovered by the opposition. And what blows my mind is that it wasn't even reviewed. Yeah. And even looking at it again.
Yeah.
It was reviewed.
It wasn't. It was not reviewed.
No, because they got it. They got in snaps. They rushed up to the line and snapped it. I think they only replayed it. I don't think they actually reviewed it, because that's what's so annoying, that you've got New York that should be able to step in.
Because we can't do anything at that point. I think did we not even call a timeout to give it more time for them to take a look? But yeah, they But anyway, it didn't get reviewed by the umpires. They've confirmed that it was just called an incomplete pass and move on.
Yeah,
It blows my mind that these type of decisions. I think I read afterwards that Sean Hockley has now refereed 5 Eagles games in the Jalen Hurts era. Every single one of them has been won by the Eagles, and every single one of them that. Penalty differential has been massive in favor of the Eagles. It feels like the NFL aren't even trying to hide it anymore.
It makes you very cynical, doesn't it? Anyone remember the McGovern offensive holding where the defensive tackle basically just fell forward, and they gave that as holding.
One thing
the one thing you I saw, and you watched the video carefully, you know, obviously Kelce got done twice towards the end of that, in the, pretty much in the last drive with false starts under center. Yeah. That one where Jordan Phillips actually got called for offside and actually just bulldozed Cam Jurgens.
Yeah, the old, Zaire,
you watch when they do a close up. Someone, I'm trying to find the thing. He flinches again, and actually that sets thing off. So that technically should have been a full false start. And yeah. I'd love how Kelce came out on his own podcast and say that Jordan Phillips should be fined for that tackle on Jurgens, and yet he makes no reference to the fact that the refs were with them the whole time and all the stuff that went for the Eagles, and when they should have been called.
And there was the one play where we scored the touchdown, and I think one of their defensive backs levels Stefon Diggs nowhere near the ball. To put
his like flat on the floor, necessary roughness as well. Yeah,
doesn't even get discussed.
No, blocking the back on Saron Neal as well. I wrote that one down as well.
Nothing
staggering, isn't it? I mean, the problem is it brings out the most cynical parts of us. What would have been, you know, from a neutral point of view, an absolute cracking game of 31 all and going to overtime ends up getting derailed by. Official, they've got replays, they've got coaches' challenges, they've got like these booth reviews, they've got New York can almost come in and override it, and they still the most egregious kind of, like, I'm almost willing to let go the sort of AJ Brown catch because it's a sort of borderline one and I can kind of see it both ways. And I understand like DPI and that kind of thing, but some of them are just so bad. You just can't understand how they can get it this badly wrong. And yeah,
the horse collar, that's as bad a decision as I've seen, not only to miss the horse collar, but then also to double down on it and call it intentional grounding.
Well, yes. Gene, the official rule, Gene Steratore says, obviously, the official rule on horse collar penalties is if they're in the pocket, it's not a penalty. Yes. Once he's leaves the pocket, he's offered that. He was in the pocket. He was out of the pocket, so it should have been a foul. But yet, when Hercules actually spoke to the media afterwards, He said it was nothing, it wasn't a foul.
He was claiming that most of the force was in the front.
Yeah.
When actually there's plenty replays that show that that's rubbish. And even the way that Josh Allen fell, you could see that he's yanked him back from behind.
Yeah.
And the guy's looking directly at it.
Yeah.
It's bonkers, and that's 15 yards. It puts us on about the 10 with the first down. Yeah.
So he said he felt that he was pulled down from the front of the jersey in the collar. Then he said they asked him why did they flag him for intentional grounding. His response was he's responsible for where the ball goes, given that he started throwing motion after he was contacted. Now I get that he's in control. He started throwing as he's being tackled. So what? And he said Hercules said so we didn't feel the ball was in the vicinity or the area of an eligible receiver.
Even though it was.
Completely.
The Bills would actually had the ball at the 2-yard line with that collar penalty.
With an automatic first down, yeah. So you got a couple of shots and at least a 3-point. I mean, it is coming to something when Gene Steratore, who's a pretty down-the-line sort of guy, who will do that, plus Romo, plus Jim Nantz, saying that's so blatantly. If like they won't take sides, and fair enough, because they're there to call the game.
Even to the point where how do you miss that?
How is this even taking place? You know it's bad when even the commentary team have to take a side.
On the pass interference on Sherford, Hercules said it didn't appear to be a pass interference from the official's angle. So he goes on to say, so on that play, from the view and the angle of the official, we just didn't feel there was significant hindering of the receiver's ability to catch the ball. Again, there's on a couple of these penalties, there were actually officials looking directly at the play. And you could see he had his arm around him. He actually had his arm on his arm, so he couldn't extend as the ball was in the air. So you can't say that he couldn't, it was not hindering his ability.
And they give DPI for absolutely nothing as well. That, I think that's what sort of rankles as well, because like again, it's where that line is supposed to be. Like a bit of arm round and a bit of thing, I wouldn't actually mind if they were consistently saying, okay, well, a bit of argy bargy is fine because it is a physical game. But when you have people giving it for just a little nudge in the back when the guy's jumping up, when was it Taran Johnson against the Broncos? They gave a DPI when he just turned round and was just getting and he just ran into the guy
because he underthrew the ball.
Yeah.
Yeah, under through the ball, turn around and try and move back. And yeah, you can't do anything. You, as a defender, you can't do anything about that because you're there.
Yeah. And that's DPI, but literally putting your arms around someone and blocking the arm while the ball is on its way isn't.
No.
Mm. Enough to put you off the game, isn't it? And you think.
I think the one decision in that game that I think everyone really, really is undecided on whose fault it is, was obviously the incompletion in overtime on that potential touchdown play between
to Davis. I know it's easy to blame Gabe Davis, but I'm going to blame Gabe Davis. I think he had a free thing, or he just had to turn around and just look for it. He was that free. He could have.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen people saying that it's on Allen.
No.
Because he's actually he can freeze the defense and actually had a bit of time to actually throw and chase it. But when you get an all out blitz and you've got coverage where you've got inside leverage, Davis just made the wrong play on that.
Yeah,
but
he went outside when he should have gone inside. It was simple.
Yeah.
And I think it was on a previous play.
The blitz was coming as well, so you should know the middle of the field. The inside should be open.
And there was a similar play earlier in the game, again between Allen and Davis, and this time Davis went inside, and it resulted in a completion. But the one good thing about this, and this is what I like about Joe Brady came out and said in there. His notes in his press conference was, if there's a miscommunication, that falls on me as an offensive coordinator. There's nothing easy about it from Josh Allen's standpoint of it's a blitz zero situation, which we know we'd get, where there's a lot of guys coming at you. You're going to have to drift and make a decision on the fly. We didn't connect on it. Gabe's not at fault. Josh isn't at fault. As the offensive coordinator, I've got the point and the thumb at myself. What can I do to put them in a better position to have the success next time we get that opportunity and we can have a walk-off there?
Yeah, he's right.
That's coming from a guy who had a spell as a head coach and got fired. Did he have a spell? No, he didn't have a spell as a head coach.
It was OC at the Panthers.
Yeah, OC. But it's dangerous. He's learned and that he's showing how it's his responsibility. And this is what Sean McDermott should be doing rather than sacking coordinators and making up
He should be doing that as well. Let's not pretend that Ken Dorsey was doing a good job, but he there's more to it than that.
But the way I think it should have been made a lot earlier that decision to bring Brady in, because this offense is now really lit now. Yes, there was still a stupid interception by Allen.
I think it was actually a pretty good play.
Yeah, I think that was exceptional play by the defensive back. It, you know, fair enough, you don't throw the ball, but that to me was the DB wanting it more than the receiver. I think Diggs let him down a little bit on that play, and actually it was a really good play by Bradbury. I'm not too fussed about that one. I've seen him throw a lot worse balls where he's chucked it like 50 yards into triple coverage. That's a poor Josh Allen pass. This was just a good play by the defensive back.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that everyone can keep wanking on about his consecutive games with an interception, because actually that wasn't that bad. He's thrown plenty of bad ones. I actually don't think it was that bad. So
no, and let's be honest, I've heard an awful lot of people talking about the performance of Josh Allen this game being probably he was the best player in the league. Like it was the best individual performance by anybody. And yet they gave Offensive Player of the Week to Jalen Hurts.
Of course they do.
What? It's almost like the NFL has an agenda.
Yeah. I think, yeah. But then again,
a jammy throw that frankly one of the safeties should have stopped on 3rd and 15 and walk in on a bad defensive call. What else did he do?
It's also, do you know what? It's little things like you talk about the little things that win the game. We need to start having a conversation about our safeties at some stage because not been good this year. And Jordan Poyer on the when they're driving down the field to get the game tying field goal, Jordan Poyer decides to bat something down rather than letting him catch it. And
then you're going to have to rush to the line.
You've got to rush to the line. You've made their lives a lot easier rather than having to have them hurry up. I'd much rather like than thinking, shit, we've got 30 seconds. Quick, we've got to go. And the panic of having to take it so you can't get yourself set properly rather than give them the time of it. And then we iced them anyway. But
hey, you would have iced them, wouldn't you? Fucking.
I probably would have. But yes, it's little things like that, and that goes back to last season in the Vikings game where we're trying to intercept a ball in that situation rather than put it down to end the game. And you think,
but I think
they're not ready. The defensive players, time and time again, are not putting themselves in the best position to win, and that is squarely on Sean McDermott.
Yeah, but I think, as I say, I think we want to end this show as best we can on a positive. And I think that offense in the last 2 weeks has been the positive out of all of this. I mean, he's got the best out of Shakir. He's got the best out of Cook. He's got the best out of Kincaid. He's starting to spread it around a lot more. I mean, this season in zone coverage, Khalil Shakir, this is how well he's actually done this year. In zone coverage this season, he's had 15 targets, 13 receptions, 240 yards, one touchdown, and 141 passer rating when targeted.
Yeah, he's good. I really like what I see.
And then the last one is the acquisition of Douglas. I mean, this season he's actually this is PFF. Actually, having the most valuable cornerback in the league. Yeah, there was a couple.
That's Matt Milano in like 24th place.
Yeah.
That's that. Okay. Tyrell Dodson being number one.
I think it's a case that he's actually made a difference, and I think the offense and the addition of Douglas on there is the bright spots in this little period that we actually we're going through, and hopefully Brady will have more of the bye week to actually implement a few more plays, take out a few Dorsey stuff.
Might put in his own plays.
Hey?
Might get Dawson Knox back.
And actually have a few more weapons, and I think Jones
also in the locker room for this game as well, and there's rumour that he might his practice window might be opening again, so that'll be interesting.
Yeah, of the three sort of IR, well, there's other people on IR, but of those, the big three, shall we say, he's probably got the best chance. I mean, Trey's out, I can't have Milano, no way, but no. Daquan Jones, maybe you might have a shot.
But I say that.
With all the shit going down with the defense with McDermott, with how the Bills are playing, as much as we say we're down on it, there are certain players, certain things that we can actually say during the season that have been a bright spot, and I think we've just got to continue trying to not exploit it but nurture that. 'Cause, I mean, Bernard is one of them. Obviously, yes. Benford, the last two seasons. Obviously, James Cook, even though he had a drop for potentially a would-be touchdown and obviously a fumble in the first game, he's still one of the top five rushers this year in the NFL. Obviously, getting the best out of Diggs, Kincaid and all that. There are good stuff. Obviously, it's outweighed by the bad, but we've got a bye week to try and calm down and try and group for what will be a tough stretch and a big game next week against the the struggling Chiefs.
Yeah.
So so breaking news. Breaking news. The Athletic's Tim Graham, who's a Bills reporter, is reporting that he has spoken with Terry Pegula and that there is, quote, zero chance that the Buffalo Bills will fire head coach Sean McDermott, even if we do not make the playoffs. Apparently, his seat has become hotter, but owner Terry Pegula has no desires to dismiss McDermott after the season. According to Graham, the owner reportedly holds McDermott in high regard and doesn't want to meddle with the chemistry his coach shares with general manager Brandon Bean.
Well, that's that then.
So
he's probably I wonder, he's probably that might be owner talk for you've got six games next season or you definitely are fired.
I really hope that's it's the vote of confidence.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if it's like if we start 3-3 next season and we lose to at home to the Patriots, then that's it.
Yeah.
It might be that.
To be honest, I still think it's going to be a bit of a smokescreen. I mean, obviously I still think that as much as I believe that he will stay on and he probably will, I still think if there is a change and if there's more decline over the next, if we pretty much lose every game for the rest of the season, or at least don't win at least half of them, then I can definitely see potentially, unless he's going to do something with that top draft pick, and maybe that's what we should be talking about soon, the draft and how to actually reinvigorate this offense, this whole team. But if we lose,
we almost want to lose out. I'd rather tank, get as good a draft pick as we can. If we lose the next game to the Chiefs, there's no point.
Yeah, and that's what I'm thinking. If we don't win out or win like half those games, as much as Pegula says, there's zero chance he's going to fire McDermott. It could lead up to the players actually coming together, going up to Terry and say, "Look, we don't want this anymore." So,
I hope so.
I'm taking it as a pinch of salt, really, that Pegula's come out and said this, and it could be anything could happen between now and Black Monday after January after week 18.
Yeah, I hope so.
But.
Because I can't, like, you can see it turning into one of those situations that gets quite toxic if he stays on. As soon as we have another defeat like this next season, if he's still there,
yeah,
this all comes round again, and we keep saying, "Well, why did he not do anything about it in the off season?" And you can guarantee Ben Johnson will go somewhere, and he'll have an offense that's absolutely lighting it up, and a team that's just playing fantastic football, and. We'll be like, why didn't we do anything? We've now got Sean McDermott. We're far too safe. And now look at us. We're in this position and the players will start to, and it will turn nasty.
Mm. So obviously we've got what, so let's end on this. We've got the bye week on there. What are you going to be doing this bye week? With no Bills football on, what are you going to be doing?
NFL related or otherwise.
Anything related. What are you going to do with no Bills game this week?
I'm going away. It was quite good because I'm going away for our annual friends getaway with nine. There's nine of us go away for the weekend in December every year. And we've been doing it for about 15 years now. So it's really, really amazing just to get away with our closest friends. We all now live all around the country. Two of the guys live in America now. They're flying over. They've just flown. They'll be into Heathrow tomorrow morning. So we're all meeting up. We've picked a place in middle of Wales, heading towards North Wales, just past Oswestry Street. So we're going to do that. So we always have a Secret Santa and we have a Christmas dinner. So it's just us lot. And then obviously go to our various parents and children and that kind of thing. do that. And then luckily, Sunday night, I'd then be swearing in the corner at the Bills game. Obviously, Bills being on the bye, that's quite good. I can just relax and not worry about it. It's probably been timed perfectly for me, so I can actually probably forget about the stress for a week, and then pick it up Monday afternoon, waiting for the countdown to the fucking 12 quid on Now TV because it was going to be on Sky, isn't it? So your DAZN money's no good here. You're going to have to dump up the money for Sky Sports. So I'm really looking forward to it.
What are your plans, Mark?
So it's my Christmas due on Saturday. I will be recovering. And and then hopefully we've got my son's under-12s team, the mighty Chip and Tan Youth. We'll be playing on our big grudge match on Sunday morning. So that's going to be interesting after a Christmas do, but at least means that I can come 6 o'clock. I can sit down with a bit of Red Zone and not get stressed by it and not watch the Bills and just chill out and watch the rest of the football, not really caring what happens.
Yeah. And me, I'm just going to be chilling. I'm probably going to catch up on all the, college games. I'm going to start prepping for next year and the draft and all that. So I'm going to still be football related, but I don't have to worry about the stresses and tribulations of tweeting random annoyance on Bills games on there. But it's going to be nice. It's going to be a nice little weekend. We get stress free and do whatever we need and get ready for next week and lead up to the Chiefs. So,
yeah,
as we say, follow all three of us on our socials. Follow the UK Bills podcast on their socials. And for Robin, Mark, it's me, Matt, saying good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Thank you for listening, and let's go Buffalo Bills.
Go Bills.
Yeah,
not
us. You don't know anything about Mark. You know anything about work? He's not. That's who we are.
Bills on three. One, two, three.